Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Ellefson with the Digital Education Podcast. I've been having these conversations with friends, but then also respected leaders, innovators, thinkers in education, people who I've had tons of conversations with about school and learning, but it's this new question of what's next, what comes after the shutdown, what comes after, how do we change, who do we become? And today, this is a really fun one for me because I'm with Tim Van Zolen, who's the director for the Center for the Advancement of Christian Education and a professor of education at Dort University in Iowa. And Tim is my boss with CASE. So Tim, love it. Thanks for being with me. Thanks for having this conversation. But when you project outwards, knowing when not, I mean, we have no idea when things kind of return to some sort of normalcy, but what might that normalcy look like, or what's coming next after this when you look at schools and learning?
Thanks, Eric. It's good to be with you, and I've appreciated these podcasts a lot and the people that you've had on, so I'm honored to be with you today. Well, first of all, I think this is the biggest disruption we've ever had in education. I think the Gallup panel just put out a piece yesterday that talked about in 2 weeks, from March 13 when they did their first poll to March 27, it went from 44% of students who were at home with their parents to 100%. So in 2 weeks, we had 100% of kids doing school at home. So it's been crazy, right? It's just been such a disruption, and it's caused stress in the system that we haven't experienced before either. And I think that stress could be measured in a lot of different ways. One would be just simply connectivity, right? We've seen accessibility magnified in terms of families that do have access to technology and those that don't. And schools have struggled to make that work. Even in the state of Iowa, we had to submit learning plans to the governor. And of the 360-odd districts in Iowa, only six did mandatory learning plans, meaning that they were going to send out work that had to be returned and was going to be assessed and was going to be given credit for. The rest of the districts either had a blend, I think 36 had a blend, or most of them said it was voluntary learning. So the system obviously wasn't ready for such a disruption. So we need to address equity within our school systems as a whole, and we need to address connectivity within school systems as a whole. So I think that's part of what's next. I think the effectiveness of training teachers to do this, because I don't think it's going away. So how do we train teachers to do this really well? I think Paul and David from Charter Oak in a recent webinar that you all sponsored talked about that parents are going to be pretty forgiving this time, but they probably won't be as forgiving next time. So I think training teachers how to do this really well is also what's next. How do we become more effective in the delivery of learning when we can't do it face-to-face? Third, what's next, I think, is the idea of inclusion. Schools have made such great gains in terms of inclusive education, but this disruption has really has made a mess of that, right? How do we serve students who don't learn well? And we actually have to include more students, because there are some students that just don't learn well in a virtual world, right? They need face-to-face, they need teachers to walk alongside of them. So I think inclusion is another part of the stress on the system. And then, you know, social emotional learning was probably faddish is not the right word, but maybe you kind of get it, right? It was becoming more and more important in schools over the last decade. And now I think it's just really critical that we provide social emotional support, and not simply for students, but also for faculty. The faculty that I talk to, they're dead tired at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. If they've spent all morning online or preparing lessons to deliver in a virtual delivery system, they're exhausted at 1 o'clock, and they're not getting the inputs that they used to get. So I don't get to see Eric, and I don't get to hear him, and I don't get to talk to him, and I don't get to shoot baskets with him at recess time, and I don't get to joke with him in between classes, right? I'm not getting those inputs that give me energy as a teacher. I still have the same outputs. In fact, I probably even have additional outputs now in this system. And then the last one, I think, is just sustainability, right? What's next in terms of sustainability? How can we We've talked about the COVID phases in three phases. The first phase was really it's ideation phase, right? How do we do this, and then how do we implement it? And I think we were given some grace there. I think the second phase is really, what do we have to adapt now that we've tried it for a week or two, and then how do we stabilize it and keep it simple but consistent for families? And then the third phase that I hope schools are getting into now is this idea of sustainability. And I think the best schools are actually even able to flourish in this type of an environment. And those are the schools we need to learn from. So that would be my thoughts in terms of what's next. And then I would really want to challenge all of us as educators, or what are the practices and pedagogies that we're going to now take with us, because we've been able to use technology in ways that we probably never used before. And there was always the promise of technology, right? That's always been part of education. And I think we've probably been able to realize that a little bit during this time. So what can we take with us in terms of technology that will help the learner, right? Technology for learning, not technology for technology's sake. So those are kind of my ideas in terms, Eric, of what's next. It's a crazy disruption, but I think elite schools, not elitist schools, but just elite schools that have elite leadership teams, they can respond to a crisis like this. So it kind of goes back to things that you and I talk about all the time in terms of the importance of the school leader. The school's going to take on the heart and soul of that leader, but the leader also has to be able to lead through these types of changes, these types of disruptions. So I hope leaders continue to surround themselves with great people. And I think you've done a tremendous job of that in terms of some of your peer network communities and bringing people together. And I think that's so important. Everybody wants an exemplar, right? In these times. And then the second encouragement I want to offer schools is how do we really leverage technology going forward? Because there could come a time where we're going to have to have a student's going to have to be home for 2 weeks, right? They test positive for COVID. They're going to have to be isolated for 2 weeks. Or maybe there's a faculty member that's going to have to be isolated for 2 weeks. So how can we use technology even better the next time around? And then the last idea is something that I've been thinking about quite a bit as you watch leaders across the spectrum, right? Whether it be our president, our governors, anybody who's in a leadership position. I just want to encourage you, don't make the decision until you have to. That sounds bad, but I think the longer you wait, the better the information is. So you still have to make the decision, but I'm thinking back to that Harvard Business Review article that you sent us 5 years ago. Sometimes you have to make a decision when you only have 65% of the information. But once you do, once you have to make that decision, be decisive, be clear, and have a plan. I was talking to a principal the other day who, he's been a little too collaborative. He's wondering, he keeps asking, should we do packets or should we do online? And it's time to make a decision, right? He's in phase two now, so he's got to sustain. So that question shouldn't be asked anymore. They've done surveys. They've responded to parents. Parents want the packets. We're going to do packets through the end of the year, right? Whatever that decision is, you have to be clear. You have to make it. You have to be decisive. You have to have a plan. But don't make it until you have to. I know there's some schools that are, wondering about start dates for next year, or should we, like colleges like Dort, are we going to start online in the fall? We need to be thinking about those things, planning for those things, but let's make sure we have as much information as we can before we make that decision.
So let me ask one clarifying question, because I'm really interested, because you're in a unique context in Iowa, and that's kind of maybe where I'd like to hone in on, because most of the people I get to talk to are in larger cities, you kind of go to the traditional things that you see on TV, but you being in Iowa and being in a college town, but then also you see what's happening throughout the state. Like, what sticks, from this online learning? And you've been doing online learning for a while. You've been a teacher in an online environment. Dort has been an innovator in that space in a lot of ways. Like, what do you hope actually sticks for a lot of these people with this maybe a hybrid approach, or maybe, kind of a dual approach to the online as well as, on campus? Have you given much thought to that in a place in particular like Iowa, where it is, primarily still a rural state?
Yeah, that's a great question, Eric. I think it's worked for a place like Dort, especially in like our master's program of school leadership. But we ask three questions, what's one thing, when they do their end of the year or end of the program portfolio demonstration for competency and the standards, we ask them three questions. What's one thing we should change? What's one thing we shouldn't change? And which was the most difficult standard to find artifacts for? The question, what should we never change? It's the Wednesday night synchronous face-to-face classes, because people desire that. right? I think that's kind of who we are. There's still that sense of belonging that we're created to live in community. And I think that's what faith-based schools do incredibly well, right? Any school you talk to when they do surveys about what makes their school special, that word community comes up again and again and again. So creating community in an online space is not easy to do, but it's not impossible to do. And I think that's one thing that I hope comes out of this. And I think that's one thing that Dort's been doing pretty well, especially with our master's program. But it goes all the way down to kindergarten, right? When you see that kindergarten come online, you see those little videos now, right, on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, right? Those kindergarten kids just love to see their teacher online. They long for that. They desire that. And I think that's who we're created to be. But I also think, Eric, that there is going to be a teacher shortage coming. I know I've been hearing about that for as long as I've been in education, but I think it's real. We're seeing it in the state of Iowa, state of Illinois, right? We're down 30% in our colleges of teacher education. So there is a shortage coming, which means there's going to be a shortage of specialty teachers coming too in terms of some of those hard to employ areas. So I think online learning is going to become even more important for smaller schools, maybe schools, 300, 400 or less, who might only have two people in their math department or two people in their science department. So to be able to deliver online learning effectively to schools like that and offer courses like calculus and physics and upper level languages and things like that is going to be critical for states like Iowa and other rural places where we just can't find teachers to serve in those areas.
Tim, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Eric, thanks for continuing to do this and getting the word out and connecting us. We appreciate it.